And right now we have Chris Landry from LandryFootball.com. Chris, good to talk to you. How you been?
Grant, I've been doing well. How are you?
You know, I'm doing good. You know, we've seen a lot of sloppy football in the NFL through 2 weeks, and I think most people agree it's the way the preseason's running, et cetera. I would think we probably would start seeing the real thing coming up here in week 3 and 4. Give me your thoughts on that.
It usually takes about 4 or 5 weeks for it to really settle in, and it's the byproduct of the OTAs, the CBA agreement, where you don't hit. The offensive line play is particularly poor when you don't practice the line of scrimmage portion of the game nearly as much. This is the result that you have. So it will vary, Grant, but I think you can pretty much take it into about week 5 before you really start to settle in and teams started to kind of hit their stride a little bit physically.
Why does it appear that so many teams in the NFL are having issues with their offensive line?
Well, just what I mentioned, the lack of preparation that you can have in the offseason, combined with the spread systems in college, it's tougher to develop guys. So you take in guys and you have to teach them a whole different concept of blocking, and you don't have any way to do that. You can't do it in shells or in charts. I mean, you can do some technique work, but you got to hit, Grant. You got to hit, you got to block. And you can't do that in the offseason. At least with receivers and quarterbacks, you can run some routes. It's not quite the same because you don't face press coverage and whatnot, but you still have a better adjustment on that part of it. But the physical side of it's just not very good. Now, offensive linemen's more technique-oriented. Defensive linemen's more athletic-oriented. So they're going to have an advantage. They're using their athleticism and their speed and their quickness. They're better athletes as a whole. And then you got offensive linemen that are just not as prepared just from a whole offseason standpoint. That is the reason why it's an issue. Now, certain teams haven't done a very good job addressing your offensive line. The Giants don't have a very good offensive line. They didn't address it this offseason. They're paying for it. Seattle hadn't had a good offensive line in a few years. They don't address it. They figure they can coach their way out of it. That's proven incorrect. They have a problem. The Raiders have a good offensive line. The Cowboys have a good run blocking offensive line. The Titans have a pretty good offensive line. So some teams have invested in offensive line play, and over time, some of these guys have developed. But getting young guys to play well early is very, very difficult.
All right, let's talk about the Denver Broncos off to a very good start. And I got to tell you, Trevor Siemian surprised me with how good he's been in the first 2 weeks. Break it down for me and tell me what you've liked about the way he's played.
Well, you know, he runs the game a lot like Alex Smith runs an offense. He's a distributor, makes good decisions, he protects the football. I think in the first game, they got off to a good start against San Diego. They had to hold on as the Chargers made a run and fell short in the kicking game. This past week, they jumped on the Cowboys early. They got some big plays and, you know, got some points early, and they made Dallas one-dimensional. So Dallas is playing from behind and being a pass-first team, which they are not. They're built as a line-of-scrimmage team, and then it just kind of snowballed. So I really thought that Denver's offense was very, very effective against Dallas defense, and they created some short. The defense created some short fields for the offense, but I thought they did a really good job. And it's about distributing of the football. And quite frankly, the interior of the offensive line blocked well for the Broncos. I worry a little bit about them at tackle over the course of the season, but they've run the football well, and that's something that I thought was a big question mark going into the year. So far so good, but I'm going to caution everybody. It's 2 weeks.
Yep.
It's two weeks.
You know, it's 2 weeks, but you mentioned someone, you mentioned Alex Smith's name, and it's not been 2 weeks for him. You know, call it whatever you want, but when I watch him play, he doesn't make mistakes. No one ever wants to talk about him. You know, I watched the way he played against Philadelphia week 1. I mean, what's there not to like about this guy?
Well, I think there's a lot more to like about him than not like. I think what people tend to look at in this business in this world is, why can't they advance? Why are they not good enough? And, you know, I think even the Chiefs organization, by the drafting so high of Patrick Mahomes, maybe feel like maybe they don't have enough explosive playmaking ability to advance into the playoffs, that they maybe are as good as they can get around the quarterback, that maybe they need to get better at quarterback. Well, maybe they have physically. but they've got a long way to go, Patrick Mahomes does, to match what Alex Smith is in terms of a decision maker and as a distributor of the football. I think he's very good. I think he's done a very good job at Kansas City, no doubt, once he's settled into a system. I just think he's not real dynamic, and that maybe contributes to some people not thinking as much of him as they should. But I think football people are very impressed with him. But just, you know, he doesn't test you downfield a lot, so you're a little bit restricted. And I think they scheme their offense very well with the running game and the short passing game, timing routes. But it's been very effective. Is it good enough to go to Super Bowl? Well, it hasn't been, I know, and they're very good defense. But maybe this is the year. Maybe it almost almost looks like, Grant, that he's playing for a job.
Yeah.
Because he's saying, you know what, if I'm not going to be in Kansas City next year, I'm going to be starting somewhere, and
that's
I'm going to prove
point.
It right here.
Yeah, and then the other team in that division, we need to talk about the Raiders. And Marshawn Lynch has had a very impressive 2 weeks. Tough to get a real gauge with their schedule, but it is what it is. This team looks like they're going to be around for a while.
No, they're a very good team. Now, yep. They're different than Kansas City and Denver in that Kansas City and Denver are built more around their defense and a ball control offense with quarterbacks that are good distributors. The Raiders are different. They are more explosive. They've got the best quarterback in the division, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I think an emerging elite quarterback. I mean, he's in that area where he continues to do it, then he's there, going to be there with Aaron Rodgers type. I mean, he is grades out consistently well week in and week out. So they're more explosive playmaking ability. They protect him well up front in the offensive line, and they are running the football well. Lynch does have a positive effect. And what this does, it keeps their defense fresh and allows them to control the game from the line of scrimmage. In essence, I think the Raiders are like the Cowboys in that they control the football at the line of scrimmage. But they've got a better quarterback. They've got more explosive playmaking ability at quarterback. Now, defensively, I worry about their pass rush opposite Khalil Mack and whether they're good enough there. I like the deep middle in their secondary, but I think they're a good defense. I don't think they're elite, but they can protect it with their offense. So it's going to be an interesting contrast in styles, as I think all three of those teams are good. And you could make the case for the Chargers, you know, while they haven't played great, you can make a case for them. They're close to being 2-0, and they're 0-2. So this division, the AFC West is going to be a lot of fun this year. Very competitive.
You know, you talk about Denver throttling Dallas. You know, when you look at them through 2 weeks, and a guy that I want to ask you about your take when you watch him on film and you break down Dez Bryant, it just doesn't seem like he gets a lot of separation like he used to. Or, I mean, is he – I'll ask you, I mean, talk to me about Dez Bryant. Where you know, he was the guy 2 years ago, and now it's like, okay, he's good, but is he near the top of the heap in receivers?
Well, he is, but he's a different type of receiver. He's not a great separator. He's a guy that makes plays on the ball, as a good on-the-ball receiver. Now, again, because they are so reliant on the running game, and they dictate the movement of the safeties on defense with their running game, they get him matched up a lot on one-on-one, and when they don't and they get a safety sliding over, that's when they go the opposite way. But Dez is a really good receiver going up and attacking the ball at the high point and being physical as an on-the-ball receiver. But when you get into a situation like they did last week where they're behind in their pass first and they basically have to eschew the run, then people can rear back, rush the quarterback. The ball has to come out quicker. Dez is struggling to separate, and teams are playing coverage because they're not having to worry about the run. That's not their strength. They're not going to beat you throwing the football as a pass-first team. They're going to beat you throwing the football as a run-first team, meaning their run game will force defenses into the box, and then they'll take advantage of the coverage matchups. And that's what didn't happen last week, but typically happens, and why they've been successful.
The criticism of Ezekiel Elliott from the Denver game, warranted in your opinion?
Yeah, I think there's something to it. First of all, the whole off-the-field situation's been a mess and in the legal realm, and kind of hard to figure and understand all of that. But I'll say it. I think that there's no question that ownership, Jerry Jones, has backed Zeke Elliott, has made no bones about the fact that he's his guy. You know, I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen in Washington with Dan Snyder. When young players like that feel entitled, that, you know, the owner's got their back, they answer to the owner, it diminishes the authority of the head coach. So, do I have to really run after a guy and make, and tackle on an interception? Do I really need to do that? Am I too important to do that? Does the owner want me to save myself? I mean, these are all the type of things, a sense of entitlement that happens when you have an owner is involved. And it's one of the reasons why I think the Cowboys have lacked championship pedigree, even though at times they've been pretty good teams. And it's why it's very tough to coach. Except when Bill Parcells and Jimmy Johnson coach, that's been the problem. And that's why I think they've fallen short.
Good job right there by Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com. Give me a team, and again, I know you stress it's early. I get that. Is there a team through 2 weeks that you're looking at and go, a lot better than I maybe thought? Or is there a team that's caught your eye through 2 weeks?
Well, we talked about one of them. Denver may be a little bit better than I thought. The Ravens haven't played anybody, but their defense is maybe even better than they thought. But again, play two soft teams, so we'll see. But those are two that are candidates. Detroit has done a really good job, and maybe they're a tad better. We'll see. They get Atlanta this week. On the flip side, Carolina is not a very good-looking 2-0 team on tape.
And without Greg Olsen, they got major issues.
I think so.
Right? I mean, how are they going to do anything without him?
Well, I think they're going to struggle. I mean, McCaffrey can do only so much. Quarterback struggling right now. Cam Newton is not real. The timing's not there. And I think maybe coming off the injury, accuracy, it hasn't been a real impressive looking 2-0 on tape. We'll see. Maybe they'll get better. But yeah. I have questions about them.
All right. Let's talk a little college football. And we saw a dandy at the Coliseum the other night with USC and Texas.
Yes.
And, oh, boy, is USC maybe not as good as we thought, or what's your breakdown of them?
I think this. I think they're talented. I think I worry a little bit about their depth later into the season, but they're really good. They're definitely top 5-6 good overall talent-wise, at least, 1 through, 50, 55. I think, again, depth is a little bit of an issue, but they're really talented. What I'll say, and I think Clay's done a nice job there, but Clay and Clancy Pendergrass, the defensive coordinator, they're very inconsistent. And I think they've got, I don't want to call it discipline problems, but I would call it consistency problems. They didn't show up against Western Michigan. They didn't play well against Texas. They seem very well prepared against Stanford. What's it going to be this week against Cal? I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's what you're going to get. They're not the championship pedigree that when Pete Carroll was there, they lined up, they played well, and they played better some games than others, but they were dominant week in and week out. This is not a team that has that type of championship pedigree. Now, they're talented enough to get there, but they're likely to be tripped up. I mean, they could have easily lost that Texas game very easily, and you keep flirting around in games, and somebody's going to end up and get you that's not as good as you are. So I think that is a little bit of an alarming trend and a little bit of an issue going forward that we're going to have to watch. Talented, real talented, but in some spots, definitely the most talent in the Pac-12. But I think they come up short in terms of, having some loose ends and not being all in all the time. They're just a very inconsistent, sloppy team at times.
And then I want to ask you about Clemson and, we, of course, the big game last week and how well they played. And we talk about, what's going to happen without Watson? Give me your breakdown after watching Clemson for a couple of games.
Kelly Bryant's been really good. Of course, Tony Scott, they do a really good job on the offensive side of the ball, teaching that run-pass option offense. And the quarterbacks always play well. I mean, whether it's Taj Boyd, Watson was on a different level, yes, but they're very good offensively, but they're loaded on defense. They got a lot of talent. They've got a lot of NFL bodies. They put a lot of guys in the NFL recently, and they continue to have guys. I mean, they got NFL-looking receivers, NFL-looking defensive linemen, corners, you name it. They're very, very good. Backs, they're outstanding. They're a very good team. They're off to a good start. We very well could see Clemson, Alabama in the championship game for the third time in a row. I'm not surprised they blew out Louisville. Louisville's a very average team with a great quarterback. Without the quarterback, Louisville would have lost to Purdue and to North Carolina. So I thought Clemson would blow them out. The one thing I would say about Clemson, just in comparison, say, to Alabama, they're maybe a little bit more explosive than Alabama, but Alabama's steady Eddie. You know, Alabama's going to have to beat themselves, and they never do. They're just going to line up, and they're going to pound you and grind you, and, you know, it may look close for a while, but they're going to end up beating you into submission. And I don't see anybody beating them, at least into the playoffs, and then we'll see from there. Whereas with Clemson, they're a little bit more up and down. Their highs are more explosive and exciting, but their lows can get them. Like against Pittsburgh last year, completely outplayed and outcoached in that game and lost the game. They were completely outplayed and coached by North Carolina State. North Carolina State missed a couple of field goals, or they would have lost that game and not even made the title game. So there again, they were the best team in the country at the end of last year, but yet were very that close to not even making it. So I don't know whether it's Virginia Tech or somebody, but don't be surprised if somebody gets Clemson. But I still like them winning the ACC, probably getting into the playoffs. And then, again, it might be them and Alabama once again.
And then there's Penn State. We knew we were going to be good. When you look at that team, do they have any weaknesses?
They haven't played anybody yet.
Now, right.
I'm excited this week about them going to Kinnick and playing Iowa. Defensively, they look a little better early, but again, it's against soft competition.
Right.
I want to say this is not a great Iowa offense, but we'll see going forward what they are. They are very good on offense. They're the best offense in the Big Ten. And, you know, again, I think how they improve on defense relative to how Michigan and Ohio State improve on offense kind of will determine the Big Ten East and the Big Ten overall. So, I think they're good. I think they're really good, but I'm not quite sure yet. I want to see them against some pretty good offenses and see how this defense matches up.
Yeah, you know, and again, you keep on saying it's early, and there's some of the schedules in college football we look at and we're like,
oh, yeah.
We understand why they're scheduled. We get all of that. So I asked you, you know, in the NFL, and you said 4 to 5 weeks. All right, so give me a gauge in football when we see a team like, you know, Penn State where they haven't played anybody or other team. How many games do you need to see in college football before you have a real good read on a team?
Well, I think it takes longer sometimes because – you know, when you're playing some games, like you said, at this point you'd have a pretty good feel for a team like Penn State if they'd beaten three or four good teams, but they haven't.
Right.
So now this is their first game against a good team. Everybody got all excited about LSU, you know, and I thought they'd have some trouble against Mississippi State last week. I didn't think they'd get blown out. Well, now they kind of know, and they hit resistance, and now we'll see where they go from there. But I think it takes a good 2 to 3 games against really good competition to get a feel for what they are. In essence, we often don't know to the end of the year. I mean, it's, you know, Ohio State last year looks good, but you're wondering, are they a little young? Do they have enough offense? Maybe they do. And then you get to the end of the year, boom, they lose and end up Penn State ends up, you know, winning the East and then they're gone. So very often, Grant, you don't find out to the end of the year when you start to play really good teams. You know, for example, Oklahoma State's a very good offensive team. Oklahoma State is a really good team. You know, we're going to find out definitely on November 4th when they play in Stillwater, but we're going to find out in a few games in the Big 12, like Oklahoma State, we'll see them play a team with a pulse for the first time this year against TCU. So I think you'd learn a little bit more each week, but the level of competition is a little tougher to gauge in college than in the NFL, obviously.
Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com. For the fans that are listening that want more information and what's going on with LandryFootball.com, let's talk to us.
Well, we've done this now. It's our third year, and what we do is we break the game inside the film room. It really was born out of my parent company, Landry Football Operations, which serves as a consulting, coaching and scouting consulting firm to NFL teams and college programs. And LandryFootball.com is a way to provide a lot of that information to the fans. So we take you inside the film room, the college game, the pro game, evaluating these games, pre and post, telling you what happened, evaluating prospects. If we like to say if it involves players, teams, coaches, schemes, that's what we provide for you. And we do it. It's like having your own coaching and scouting department for less than a magazine subscription. Got a lot of different free information on there, and then obviously we have a membership package. Now, what we're doing right now, we are running specials where you can get a discount for the football season, but also we're going to take 50% of your membership and we're going to put it towards the flood relief victims due to the storms in Florida and in Texas. So it's an opportunity for you to enjoy the game of football a little bit better, particularly during the season and then all year round in the off season, as you well know, as we break down the draft and whatnot in the off season. But it's a way to enhance your enjoyment of the game, and we think you'll love it. Check us out at LandryFootball.com for more details.
Chris, great stuff. We'll talk to you next week. Be well.
Hey, look forward to it. Thank you so much, buddy.
Chris Landry, good stuff right there. LandryFootball.com. Grant Napier back with you. Niners tomorrow at home at Levi's Stadium against the Rams. And I'll tell you, with the way the NFC West looks, and let's just call it the way it is, it looks awful. Arizona looks terrible, and they're not going anywhere with Carson Palmer as your quarterback. Seattle looks awful. The Niners are 0-2. The Rams 1-1. I mean, I don't want to get, booted off the air for this comment, but you just never know. I mean, the 49ers are 0-2, right? What was the difference between the game that they won, or excuse me, the game that Seattle won and the Niners lost? What was the difference in that game? A couple of scrambles by Russell Wilson to extend drives. That was it, right? Other than that, it was a fairly even game. So if you could win tomorrow, then, again, I'm not picking the Niners to win, but what I am saying, you know what? 8 wins may win that division this year. Now, I go by what Chris Landry said. It's early. And last year, the Seahawks had the same issues as they're having this year. And after a slow start, they turned things around. I still think they're their favorite to win the division. But you can't tell me that you look at that offensive line or lack thereof and feel like all their problems are just going to be taken care of. Then I look at Arizona. They're just not very good. Period. They're just not. And they go on the road and lose week one at Detroit, and then they barely beat a terrible Indianapolis team. And, Carson Palmer, I've said this for years and years and years. You're not winning if Carson Palmer's your quarterback. So I have to rule them out. And then how about the Rams, for crying out loud, right? The Rams are 1-1. They took apart the Colts with ease at 46-9. Then they lose to Washington 27-20. And, I mean, I don't know what to expect tomorrow night, do you? What type of game are you expecting from the 49ers? You know, they've got some issues on their defense with injuries. You know, without Eric Reed, that is, a loss for them that you got to be concerned about. I don't know what to think about tomorrow's game. All I can say is you just never know in a division that looks this weak. And again, I think the division's weak. There's nothing through 2 weeks that would lead me to believe that the NFC West has got to be a division you need to worry about. Nothing that I've seen so far. I would say the same thing about the NFC East. There's nothing I've seen through 2 weeks of these NFC East where I'm like, oh, boy. You know, all three teams, Philly, Dallas, Washington are 1-1. The Giants are 0-2. Detroit, Minnesota, Green Bay, I think are legitimate. Green Bay's got a lot of injuries right now, but they got Cincinnati this week. That should take care of that. The NFC South, Atlanta's really good. Carolina, they're 2-0, but they're not going to win a lot. New Orleans stinks. I don't know yet about Tampa. But look at the NFC compared to the AFC. How many good teams would you say there are in the NFC right now? 2? Right? Maybe 3? How about in the AFC? Well, you've got Miami. You've got Pittsburgh. You've got Baltimore. You've got Denver. You've got Oakland, you've got Kansas City. Correct? And I don't know about Miami yet. I need to see more of them. You know, again, last time I checked, Jay Cutler's the quarterback, correct? But again, I go back to the NFC, and you look at the NFC West. If the Niners can win tomorrow, at the very least, all right, at the worst, they're going to be a game out after this week. Seattle is at home. Arizona's at home. Arizona's got the Cowboys on Monday Night Football. Seattle has to go on the road this week. If I said they're at home, I misspoke. They're at Tennessee. And again, I look at Arizona. I don't see them beating Dallas on Monday night. Only because of Carson Palmer. I don't see it. So the NFC, and again, yeah, I heard what Chris Landry had to say. It's very early. It is very early. And there are teams right now that we think are not very good that will get on a roll and they'll put together, you know, 3 out of 4, 4 out of 5. It happens every year. It will happen this year. No doubt about that. All right, college football, kind of a blasé week. There's not a lot going on this week in college football. You know, it's one of those weeks where, there's nothing that really excites you unless you were, went to one of the schools. You know, top-ranked Alabama, they're at Vanderbilt, all right? USC, they're at Cal. You know, TCU, Oklahoma State, not a bad game. Two teams, you know, in the top 20, Oklahoma State ranked 6th, TCU 16th. You know, I think Georgia, Mississippi State's probably the best game on the card at Athens. And, you know, I'm not going gaga over the Bulldogs, but that should be a pretty good game. Georgia at home against Mississippi State. But really, it's not a great weekend in college football, or at least the matchups on paper don't look very good. You know, then you scoot ahead a little bit, you know, and you look at the big games that are upcoming, you know, in college football. There's nothing out there, you know, that makes you go, oh, boy, I can't wait for that game. You know, I think in 2 weeks, Clemson is at Virginia Tech. That should be a very competitive game. I know Auburn and Mississippi State play, I think, in 2 weeks, two top 20 teams at the moment. Not a lot of good games coming up in the next 2 weeks in college football. Doesn't mean I won't be watching. Doesn't mean you won't be watching. But, you know, there are not a lot of great games on the card. That is for sure. And, you know, we're talking a lot about, I hate talking about Heisman in September. I can't do it. Call me back up around Halloween. I'll start talking about the Heisman. I'm not going to look at two or three games and start talking about that. We are too many games have to be played before we can start talking about the best player in college football. Hey, we'll come back. Take your phone calls at 339-1140, 800-920-1140. And something that happened today at Yankee Stadium, I want to get your take. What do you think? Do you think that the baseball needs to put more screens up all the way to the dugouts and maybe beyond, depending on where the dugout's placed? Do you think that is going to happen in Major League Baseball? Another scary incident today at the stadium when a young toddler, obviously young, when a toddler, a little girl, got hit in the face with a line drive. What do you think? Do you think they're going to change the mandatory ruling as it comes to protecting fans at Major League Baseball games? Give me your thoughts on that. This is Sports 1140 KHDK. Grant Appiah back with you on this Wednesday, taking your phone calls at 339-1140, 800-920-1140, and we get to Marlon. Hello, Marlon.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's happening?
Man, just enjoying my day, but I wanted to talk to you about the incident at Yankee Stadium.
Yes.
As a baseball fan, I know not to take my toddler behind dugouts. And I believe baseball should have a no toddler zone, because how many times have you seen a ball or a bat fly off a bat, or the bat fly out of a batter's hand towards that direction?
It happens frequently.
Yeah.
So you think there should be an age limit for whatever sections you're referring to? Is that what you're saying?
Well, let's just take the people out that have their phone in their hand that's not watching the game. It's not safe behind there.
Well, if they are on their phone during a baseball game, they're making it more unsafe than it is. Would you agree?
Yes, okay. I would.
And I'm not saying that it's realistic to think that fans that are sitting close to the field aren't going to be on their cell phones, because I know that's unrealistic.
Yes.
So do you think, all right, so with everything said, and again, I don't know the condition of the toddler. I don't. They're not releasing that information, but it looked very, very serious.
Yeah.
Do you think that today's incident will change Major League Baseball's view on requiring stadiums to do more to protect their fans?
No.
And you say that based on what?
Well, people getting hit behind the dugouts has been going on probably as long as baseball has stadiums.
Okay.
And this somebody getting hit isn't nothing new. It's just that this just happens to be a young toddler. And heaven forbid that it happened, but it happened.
Yes, it did.
Baseball is always slow on catching up with the time.
Well, I don't know what catching up with the times means in terms of protecting fans. I told you that in the National Hockey League, a young girl had to lose her life when she got struck in the head by a deflected hockey puck up behind the goal. And now it's standard now that all NHL arenas have netting that goes above the glass behind the goals to protect that from occurring.
I'll say this. It's a money thing. If you got people paying for those seats, premium prices, and they start complaining about the netting right there, it's blocking my view. It's a money thing. I don't think baseball is going to do anything.
All right. Thank you for the call. You have a good one. Let's move along to Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Yeah, hi, Grant. Great show. So the bottom line, I think, is if parents take a toddler to a game, it's their responsibility to watch the kids, okay? Major League Baseball can only do so much, and the last thing I want to do is go to a game and be surrounded by netting and screens. So that parent who took that poor child to that game is totally responsible. If they're on a phone, if they're not watching every pitch and protecting that child, it's their fault. If I go out on my boat and my kid, I'm not supervising and they fall overboard without a life jacket, or I'm not watching them, that's my fault. You can only do so much for people, and I am sick and tired of cop-outs, and it's just a cop-out. So when Major League Baseball puts up netting because of this situation, and they probably will, although the commissioner's comments today weren't the best, but it's probably where they're going. So anyway,
well, I would say this about today's incident, and it was a split second. I mean, it was a line drive on a bad angle. Frazier, the batter, was way out in front, and I mean, literally, the angle of the ball was something that you wouldn't even think was possible that went into the stand. So it was a instant. It was a split second.
Yeah, that's tough. And when I go to a game, I bring a glove, and maybe I'm the exception. So it's difficult. More importantly, you've got trouble with Eli and the Giants. They look terrible.
Well, I don't have a problem with Eli. I definitely there's definitely a big problem with the Giants. I'm not worried about Eli Manning, but I think it's very safe to say the offensive line is putrid.
I've seen him playing scared. That one play yesterday where it was a phantom tackle, and I'm surprised nobody jumped on it, but he went down. There was a defender in the area, and he barely clipped, like, his toe.
Yeah, and he went down. I know the sack you're referring to.
You saw that. Yeah, that was horrible.
Here's the deal. He's not a mobile quarterback. We know that. We've known that for years. If the Giants' offensive line cannot block better, then the Giants are going to have a horrible year. It's as simple as that. Now, I would also say that they pretty much had the same offensive line last year and went 11-5.
Right.
But that doesn't mean they're going to be good this year. That's for darn sure.
And what I don't understand is why they don't try to get them a running game.
Well, you can't get a running game without an offensive line. You're going backwards. You got to get an offensive line first, then a running game. Brian, welcome to the show.
Grant, how you doing today?
I'm good, Brian. What's up?
Good. Just a quick story real fast, man. When I was 9 years old, My dad was playing on a co-ed hardball baseball league. His manager was playing right field. And I was sitting in the stands, and he threw the ball so hard it went over the fence, hit me right in the chest, knocked the wind out of me. I couldn't breathe for a good, you know, a couple of minutes,
sure.
It felt like. And after that, they changed it to where there couldn't be any more little kids or toddlers or anything like that sitting behind the fence line.
Interesting.
They had to move them all up away from where the ball would hit.
All right. Well, maybe just my take.
Yeah, maybe they should do that.
Maybe. You know what? And that's not going to prevent a ball from going into the stands at 105 miles per hour. But
a
toddler obviously is not going to have the wherewithal to protect themselves. But you're right. Maybe that's a start.
Yeah. Have a good one, Grant.
All right, you too. 1 hour left. Matt Barrows from the Sacramento Bee at 6:15 to talk about the Niners game tomorrow against the Rams. This is Sports 1140 KHDK.